You're with SBS Radio.
We're very excited to get this funding and get this project up and running. It's a real credit to the people like the Indigenous Reference Group at the Menzies School of Health Research, who were very instrumental in pushing the Menzies to actually start some research on traditional medicinal plants. They felt there was a real need to do some research in this area. They really wanted researchers to look at how these plants are used, how they might interact with Western medicines, how effective they were, how safe they were. That was one of the driving forces, I guess, to actually get this project up and running, was to respond to that.
And how long is this project slated to run for?
The funding's actually fairly limited. It's only the funding will only go for about 18 months, but we had a much bigger project in mind, and we see this funding as really a pilot phase or a start-up for the project, and we'll be looking for further funding opportunities to keep the project going.
Besides the researching the traditional medicine, it's also got a component that's really exciting. It's creating job and industry opportunities for the mob up there.
Yeah, and look, that was really another parallel request that came to us. Is a number of Indigenous communities up here are already involved in some business out in their communities and on country around harvesting particularly bush tucker plants and things like the Kakadu plum. And some communities were asking for some research to find more plants that had some commercial potential, because things like the Kakadu plum, it only fruits for a few months of the year, so the business activity is constrained by the fruiting season. So they were really keen to have some research to find some other plants that could extend the business activity for a longer part of the year. And of course, as soon as you extend that business activity, you're creating more employment opportunities and more of an income stream that can be actually targeted out on country and in the community itself, which is really important.
Some of these plants are not available all year round, as you just said, and some are endangered. So how will you translate it into an industry that can be flourish and be sustainable for the local communities?
Yeah, well, that will be one of the factors that will be, as we look at the plants that the Indigenous communities talk to us about that they use as medicinals, we'll be looking at factors like, okay, which of these is there enough of out in the country that it can actually be sustainably harvested from the wild? And so anything that's rare or threatened or endangered, you know, if there's not enough of it there, then you can't develop a commercial enterprise. So we won't be looking at any species that are rare or threatened or endangered. And in fact, what you find when you look at these traditional medicinal plants is, for the most part, they are really very common species right across a very broad area. And I guess that makes logical sense. If you're looking for plants that can help you with your health and your medicines, you don't want to be relying on something that's really rare and hard to find. You want plants that are there for most of the time and are relatively easy to find and harvest.
But the Kakadu plum in particular, because when I was researching for this interview, I realized that the Kakadu plum has got 500 times more vitamin C than some more commonly used plants around the world. So it's a very potent and very promising plant.
Yeah, and it was that discovery quite many years ago about the high vitamin C level that stimulated a lot of this interest in bush tucker. So not so much the medicines, but a look at the bush food plants, because this was an edible fruit. And that high vitamin C level then led to a lot of marketing, and it established a market for the fruit overseas. A lot of countries like Japan and Europe are really interested in foods that have what we call this functional food element. So they have extra health benefits from eating the food. And so quite a market then was established for the Kakadu plum, and it's now, you know, you see it actually included in all sorts of products, from jams and preservatives and shampoos and all sorts of things. And that all came from that initial discovery of the high vitamin C levels.
But won't the rarity influence a cost in a way? Because the rarer, then the more expensive it's likely to become on the market.
Well, I mean, Kakadu plum is quite common. There's many indigenous communities that harvest it. The tree is found from in the Kimberley right across the Northern Territory and into northern Queensland, so it's really a really widespread tree. And of course, many places have actually started planting more of it. It's pretty easy to grow, and so in a couple of places, even some plantations have started to make it easier to harvest. It has a good price. I mean, the people picking it, you know, they get paid so many dollars per kilo for the fruit. So it has a real commercial value. And in some communities, they're actually value-adding. They're actually processing that fruit by either freeze-drying it down. And so they get paid an even higher price for the processed product. And the Kakadu plum is one of our models for our medicinal plant one. It's an example that's had a bit of history now in developing as a business. We're right at the start of the medicinal plant thing, and we believe we can learn quite a bit from the way the Kakadu plum business has sort of grown and developed, and we can learn quite a bit from that.
And as far as jobs are concerned, I hear you already have indigenous scientists working on the project as well.
Yes, we do. We're very pleased that we've already been able to appoint two indigenous trainees. We have two young ladies who are very enthusiastic. We've got one of those is doing a Certificate 3 in laboratory skills in the labs here at Menzies, and the other one is doing a Bachelor of Environmental Science. So they're studying part-time and they're working part-time in this project. And we're actually also, we've been advertising for an Indigenous postgraduate candidate, so somebody who might want to do a master's degree or a PhD in this area. We've got a vacant space for somebody interested in that field of work. And we think the Indigenous training will only expand as this project keeps going. We're looking to bring in other Indigenous trainees in different aspects of the project. So it's certainly an area that we're keen to actually expand it, and we're putting quite a bit of energy and any additional funding we get will have a component for that Indigenous training.
Yeah.
The only thing that some people raise and like to ask the question about is you're using traditional knowledge, Indigenous knowledge as the source of this work and this business, and so what are you doing to recognise and protect that Indigenous knowledge? And of course that's as well as the work we're doing in the lab, we've almost got a parallel stream of work with the project that is working on the issues of how do you develop fair and equitable benefit sharing with the Indigenous partners that that come and join us on this project, who provide their Indigenous knowledge, and how do we protect, recognise and protect that Indigenous knowledge. So that's something that we're very, very conscious of, and it's very important to the project and is part of actually our project, is to try and develop models of how you recognise and protect and ensure equitable benefits go back to the Indigenous people that provided the knowledge in the first place.
Tell us what you think. Rate this podcast on iTunes. It helps other people to find us.